Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Celebrating 6 years is radio's small business superhero. He's a syndicated radio host, syndicated columnist, author of 2 books, and all-around nice guy.
He's everywhere! He's everywhere!
The most fantastic crime fighter the world has ever known.
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
We're back. It's 34 After. Thank you very much for hanging around with us today. And if you just tuned in, welcome aboard. Our website is www.jbsba.com. And when you, if you have a question or a comment, you'd like to get a question answered, or if you have like to make something, make a comment or an observation about the show, all you got to do is send us an email. That's askjim@jbsba.com. When you get to my website, by the way, don't forget to subscribe to our free newsletter. Tony Paradiso is our guest, ladies and gentlemen. Tony is one of our top management experts in our brain trust. He's the author of an outstanding book called The Management Minefield, Avoiding the Pitfalls of Corporate Politics. And Tony helps people make sure that they put their management foot forward, their best management foot forward, and when they enter the marketplace. And he's our good friend. Tony, welcome back to the show.
Well, thanks for having me.
It's good to have you back, Tony. And folks, one of the things that Tony has been doing with us for the last year or so, maybe a little bit more than that, from time to time when Tony joins us, we talk about ethics. And Tony, what I mentioned earlier when I was letting the folks know you were coming earlier in the hour, I mentioned that we were going to talk about this topic. And, you know, and I imagine people listening thinking, well, you know, what do you guys need to talk about ethics for? I know right from wrong. And what I said was something that you may have heard me say before, and that is that, well, right and wrong are black and white. Ethics is gray. And I'd like your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, that's very accurate, actually. I mean, you know, there are a lot of things that are clear cut, but when you get into the business world, it really does turn into shades of gray, because people don't enter the business world thinking they're going to try to be devious or commit unethical acts, and it happens kind of in a very slow process, and you don't even notice it, and then all of a sudden one day you realize that you've gone over the line. And I think if you look at some of the most egregious scandals, and those are extreme cases of it, they didn't, you know, those people didn't start out to do what they did, but mm-hmm. little by little, you know, you kind of go with the flow. Your boss asks you to do something. You cut a deal at the end of a quarter to make your number, and you think, well, you're just doing something good for the company. But those things add up, and they tend to desensitize people to what the way you should run your business in the long term.
And it winds up being down. Then you wind up going down that slippery slope, don't you?
Absolutely right. And then you get to the point, in the case of all the ones that have made the headlines, you get to the point where you've gone past the point of no return, and now you're just attempting to save yourself because you know you've gone over the line, and the objective now is to try to hold on and hope that things get better and you don't get found out, and all you do is dig yourself a deeper and deeper hole. And that's what happened.
Pretty much for the last, and of course the drama, the real drama in the marketplace are the big deals, right? WorldCom, Enron, Adelphia, Quest is another one, and some of the other things that have gone. Citibank has settled something recently. The Martha Stewart situation. Those are some of the real Tyco, I should also mention. Those are some of the real visible dramatic ones that lapses of ethics and actually beyond ethics, just some of them broke the law. And by the way, folks, violating ethics doesn't always break the law, does it?
That's correct, too. I mean, you could be unethical and you could be legal, but in the long term, it's just not a good way to run your business. But yes, I mean, the ones that have made the headline are clearly extreme cases. You'll hear a lot of business leaders say, well, it's just a few bad apples. And to a certain extent, that's true. You know, the very worst of the worst are a few bad apples. But in 30 years of corporate life, I've seen very, very similar things in almost every company that I've been with. Now, again, you made the distinction between ethical and legal. In some cases, some of the companies I was with were doing illegal things. More often than not, they were doing unethical things that ultimately hurt their business because,
right.
you know, because of this 90-day mentality or this short-term mentality, and it eventually catches up to you because you just can't sustain. You can't sustain a business when you're not functioning, you know, on the up and up.
You know, Tony, when I was learning how to fly, my instructor used to say, now, what do you think about, what if you did this? And I said, I could do that. It's legal, and I'd studied the book. I knew that what he was telling me, asking me if I was legal. And I said, yeah, it's legal. And he said, would you do it? I said, well, it's legal. He said, yeah, but it's also something that will get you killed. And so, you know, it's like you were saying, just because it's legal doesn't mean you should do it. Stand by. When we come back, I'm going to ask Tony if things have changed in corporate America over the last 2 or 3 years. Tony Terrell, stay with us. We're back at 17 Till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the small business advocate. Tony Paradiso is our guest, ladies and gentlemen. He's the author of The Management Minefield. Tony, give us your website, please.
It's www.paramarconsulting. That's P-A-R-A-M-A-R consulting, all one word, .com.
And you have really recently expanded your newspaper syndication career, haven't you?
Well, yeah, I've been writing a newsletter and a column for my website, but now I write a business column for second largest paper in New Hampshire, the Telegraph, and soon I'll be doing a little Andy Rooney segment on a business and political show on one of the two television stations in the state.
Well, congratulations, and once again, folks, the cream rises to the top, and Tony's
sometimes. So hopefully it doesn't sour.
Tony's a good example of that. Tony, congratulations. Tony, I'm proud of you.
Thank you.
Okay, Tony, mostly we're hearing these days, the folks were talking about ethics and the breaches of ethics and beyond ethics when you start out maybe fudging things a little bit and then you breach an ethical situation that nobody knows about, and then you go down that slippery slope that maybe winds you up in prison. And so now most of the news along these lines, Tony, is the major corporate folks getting, you know, being tried and getting convicted, and some hung juries, and there'll be some new trials, and some companies writing some billion-dollar checks. Citibank recently agreed to do that with their involvement in the WorldCom debacle, and so mostly what we're hearing about are the settling of some of the things that happened 2 and 3 years ago. Anything new going on out there?
Well, actually, there's a lot of positive things that have happened. Yeah, you're hearing about all the aftermath of the scandals, but I want to give kudos to Bill Donaldson, who is the chairman of the Security and Exchange Commission, because he's really done a terrific job of trying to bring some real controls and oversight to the business world. So they're doing some very good things in the SEC these days to provide legitimate oversight, not just be kind of a window dressing,
mm-hmm.
including talking about analyzing or regulating the hedge funds, which are funds of very wealthy investors that have been involved in all these scandals, including the mutual fund market timing, mm-hmm. and the IPO scandals. So that's a very positive thing. I think the increase in the jail terms for white-collar crime is a significant movement forward. Andy Fastow from Enron, the financial officer, he's going to get 10 years. I mean, before all this happened, that was unheard of in terms of white-collar crime. Michael Milken,
right,
was one of the worst white-collar criminals of all time, only served 18 months.
Mm-hmm.
So these guys are going away for real, real jail terms, and that's positive. I think Sarbanes-Oxley certainly is brought tighter control.
Tell us what Sarbanes-Oxley is.
Well, Sarbanes-Oxley was the corporate, you know, reform bill, and it created a whole different mechanisms in terms of accountability for financial reporting. And so it stated in no uncertain terms, if you try to play fast and loose with your financial numbers, if you're a public company and you play fast and loose, you're violating the law, and you are going to be personally responsible if you're a senior manager in that company.
The truth is, though, Tony, the laws were already in place to prevent these guys to punish the people who did something like this. Sarbanes-Oxley was really nothing more than Congress beating their chest and showing voters that they're on it, you know, they're on the job, and a few other wrinkles that they added. I mean, there are mixed reviews out there about Sarbanes-Oxley.
Yeah, I agree. A lot of it was political chest beating, but there was, when you're looking at corporate crime, any little bit helps. And I think that the biggest advantage of Sarbanes-Oxley was the extension, the increase of the sentences for white collar crime. That was probably the most valuable thing in there. You're right. A lot of the reporting stuff was just restating what was already on the books in a different form.
Well, they did add a level of accountability to all the way up to the very top people, though.
Yes, and including the board of directors, and that's the last area that I think finally, board members have realized they have a responsibility. This isn't just a perk. You don't just show up for a couple hours, a quarter, and collect your stipend or whatever you do. You've got a responsibility to the stockholders of a company, and I think there's new awareness among board members that they need to start doing their job, which is oversight of management. So there's been a lot of good changes. Where there hasn't been changes is Wall Street, unfortunately. You know, the latest headline is Citigroup paying $2.65 billion to settle the WorldCom debacle. Mm-hmm. Well, the fact of the matter is they cost investors way more than that.
Right.
And the irony of that settlement is half of it is tax deductible.
Wow.
And so it's only going to cost Citibank $1.6 billion after taxes. You and I are funding $1 billion of Citigroup's settlement. And when you look at what happened with the original settlement with the government, in total, Wall Street paid $1.4 billion of basically what I consider hush money to the government to not prosecute them. And here we go giving Citigroup $1 billion tax credit for paying off basically for fraudulent conduct. And until
I was thinking that there were some laws that were being instituted to prevent those deductions.
Well, the politicians were talking about it, but when it got quiet, they didn't do anything. So we're basically subsidizing unethical behavior on the part of Wall Street, which is why they continually get away with this kind of stuff.
Tony, one of the things that the unethical practices that was going on, and actually illegal practices, I think, was the favoritism with hot IPOs. When a hot IPO hit the market, the people who were the bankers involved were playing favorites with who got those IPOs. And Google is coming out with their IPO, and when we come back, we're going to get Tony to tell us how Google is changing the landscape of IPOs right after these messages. Tim Till, stay with us. We're back. It's 7 Till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. We're visiting with Tony Paradiso, longtime member of our Brain Trust and an outstanding member as well, the author of The Management Mindfield. And Tony, give us your website one more time.
It's www.paramarconsulting.com. That's P-A-R-A-M-A-R consulting, all one word, .com.
Tony, and by the way, folks, Tony, you still have your newsletter, right? That you
publish. Yep. Yeah, if you go up to my website, it's free. You just go up to Candidly Speaking, and you click on the little icon and send me your email address, and I put you on it. The newsletter's very edgy. It's a little bit like Dilbert on steroids. So if you like that kind of satirical humor, you might get a chuckle out of it and learn a thing or two.
You'll like it, folks. It's a good one. Tony, Google is coming out with their IPO later this year, and they're doing something different. They're sort of democratizing the IPO process, aren't they?
They are. They're doing what's called a Dutch auction, and it really is in response to all the scandals, because the founders of Google, who are in their early 30s, are very idealistic gentlemen, and they wanted to create an IPO that didn't favor the connected wealthy investor, that allowed everyone an opportunity to participate, and the auction process will do that. And so anyone that wants to get in on the Google IPO, they have to set up an account with one of the underwriters, and there are two selected right now. But they do that, and then they put in a bid. whatever you think that the shares are worth.
Just like at an auction. Just like putting up an auction.
Yeah, actually, they call it a Dutch auction because it started out in the Netherlands, and that was the way they sold tulips and flowers.
Huh.
So there's a formula. They take all the bids and they decide what price what's the highest price that will sell all the shares that have been allocated, and that's the clearing price. Now, the company has an option of offering a price below the clearing price to create a premium, because one thing you do like to see, particularly for the larger investors, which they still have to include in the process, mm-hmm. is some sort of premium. But what they don't want to see is the stock go up 100% or 200% in a couple of days, which is what was happening.
They're
predicting
that the price may come down the first day, aren't they?
Yeah. There's a real risk in this, in that the Google – the auction process has been used before. Hamburg & Quist is a company out in Northern California that has taken about 9 companies out, and they use it in Europe. But no company of this size and visibility has done it before, and there's a danger that in people's excitement that they'll overbid the price, and what will occur is something they're calling the winner's curse, in that you will pay a price and the stock will decline after it starts publicly trading. And I think there's a real risk of that.
So a strategy might actually be to not get in on the IPO but just buy it the second day?
Yeah, I actually wrote a piece for The Motley Fool, if you're familiar with that website.
Yeah.
It's a financial website. And basically what I said is, based on what I know, and investment analysis is not my focus, but I would probably wait till after the IPO, because I think there'll be a small correction, and then maybe hold the stock for somewhere no more than 2 or 3 years, because I don't think Google can sustain their market position over the long term.
Against Microsoft and Yahoo and others?
Yeah, they generate all their revenue from advertising. And that's a tough business to sustain. It's dependent on economic swings. And Microsoft is embedding a search engine in the next version of Windows, just like they did a browser which destroyed Netscape.
Right.
Now, Google will clearly survive anything that Microsoft does, but for them to sustain the growth and the stock valuation, expectations are just very high of what that company's going to do.
But from an advertising standpoint, I mean, they've done well. They've become profitable during the three worst years in advertising since the Depression, though.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you look at their financials, they're absolutely outstanding, and they're throwing off.
The owners don't need the money. I mean, they've got plenty of money.
Oh, yeah. No. They're wealthy even without the IPO. They're going to be extremely wealthy with the IPO.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the problems, is the IPO is going to change the company, whether they believe that or not. Once the company goes public, it changes the culture, it changes the dynamics, and they have to understand that they have to deal with a certain amount of change and cultural change.
And sunlight.
Yes, and sunlight.
They don't. Right. They're not going to like. I don't think they're going to like living under the lamp. Do you?
No, I don't. I don't think either. That's why I don't think it's a good long term investment. But it may be a good investment for a 2 to 3 year period.
Right, Tony. Can we find your article somewhere? Could we find that you wrote a 2-parter about this?
Yeah, I wrote a 2-part analysis of Google. It's on my website,
okay,
and it says the Google IPO Part 1, Part 2. It was just recently in the last couple of weeks. The investment
Tony,
analysis.
I'm sorry, I got to wrap it up because we got to go. But thank you for being here. Good job today. Well done.
My pleasure.
We'll do it again next time. Thanks a lot. Tony Paradiso, ladies and gentlemen, he'll be back. I will be too. I'm Jim Blasingame, a small business advocate. I'll be right back.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.